Welcome, Lisa. Thanks for taking the time from your very busy book tour to visit with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dreams of Joy debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and it was selected as Amazon's Book of the Month. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. You know, that number one on the New York Times list, that is something I never wished for or hoped for. I just never thought that that was something that could happen to me. So I have just been so just unbelievably happy. I just can't believe it.
Well, it's a great story. So Dreams of Joy continues the story of May and Pearl from your immensely popular Shanghai Girls. What made you pick up their story at this juncture in their lives? And can you give us a sneak peek of the story?
Yeah, so Dreams of Joy does pick up right where Shanghai Girls left off, where the daughter, Joy, has just found out that the woman she thought was her mother is not her mother, the man that she thought was her father is not her father, and all of these new replays which cause her in this sort of fit of despair and sadness and guilt and grief and actually a little anger to run away to the People's Republic of China. And then her birth mother, Pearl, comes after her looking for her. And while it is a sequel, there's a three-page part right at the very beginning of the book that kind of catches you up if you haven't read the previous book. And if you did read the previous book 2 years ago and are a little hazy on the details, that three pages will catch you up as well.
Okay. Do you actually visit China each time to do research each time before you write a book? Or how do you do that?
Of course, I go to China for every book. And with this one, I wanted part of it to take place in Shanghai, but also out in the countryside in a small village. And so I traveled to this very small village in Anhui Province that once had been a pretty wealthy village. I stayed in what they called a villa. It was the big villa, the big house in the village of about 300 people. But, you know, a villa in China is not the same as a villa in Tuscany.
Yeah.
So it was pretty remote and pretty far out there. But I was able to visit with people who had lived through the time period that I'm writing about. It's a great leap forward when it was a pretty terrible time in China. And so to get people to talk about that and what their families went through, and then also just to see how people are living their daily lives even today. You know, we think of China as being this big, modern country. It's a global economic superpower. But when you go out into the countryside, into these small villages, it's like you're stepping back in time 100, 200, 300 years. And so I get to see how people make baskets and how they grow their food and how they cook and how they take care of their babies. And it's just so different than being in a city, first of all, and then, of course, so different than being here in the United States.
Mm. Are your books published in Chinese, and actually do you do book tours there?
My books are all published in China. I haven't gone on official book tour to China, but I have done some events there, and I've also done a lot of interviews there. And then also this summer, a film of Snowflower and the Secret Fan is going to come out simultaneously in the United States and in China. And so for that, I've actually been doing quite a bit of interviews and things like that in China. And to me, it's so interesting because there are a lot of things there that they don't know about, you know, that people grew up not knowing about. So, for example, now with Dreams of Joy, I am getting asked a lot of questions about the Great Leap Forward. We know more about it here than they know about it there, young people. So the journalists will ask me things like, you know, why did you choose to write about the 3 years of bad weather? Because that's how they learned about this famine and about this whole big campaign, was that it was really just 3 years of bad weather, and that, you know, I don't know that 45 million people died or all of the different campaigns that went into the Great Leap Forward.
Ah, well, actually, I wanted to ask you about the movie. Were you involved in the production at all?
They every single version of the script, and I would write them very long emails. They were all in China filming, and I was actually on book tour for Shanghai Girls, so I couldn't go. But I would write them these long, long emails, and sometimes we'd have conference calls. I would say that they listened to some of what I had to say and some of my suggestions, and some things they didn't listen to at all. The film, the part that is true to the book is absolutely true to the book. I mean, it's just exactly like the book. But they also have created a modern story that wraps sort of in and around the original story. And that is a story of friendship that takes place right now today in Shanghai. So it's, you know, this parallel story of friendship, one that takes place in the past and one that takes place today.
Ah, so does that mean you didn't actually get to meet Hugh Jackman?
I haven't gotten to meet him yet. I'm hoping one of the premieres, there are three different premieres, and I'm hoping that I get to meet him at one of them.
Well, I'd love to, too.
I mean, I'd better.
Yeah.
I really want to.
Yeah. In preparing for this interview, I learned about Angel Island, and I think most Americans really have no idea. Can you tell us about the experiences that your family had there and how you used them in your writing?
Right. Well, so Angel Island is considered the Ellis Island of the West Coast. It sits in San Francisco Bay, and all of the Chinese immigrants in the past used to go through Angel Island. And Angel Island had opened very specifically to keep the Chinese out. This was a outgrowth of the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, which had barred the immigration of all Chinese immigrants to the United States, except for those who fell into four categories: a merchant, a diplomat, a student, or a minister. So they, you know, they were really looking for those people. And while it's true that there were people from, I think it's 138 countries who passed through Angel Island, really, again, it was to really open just to keep the Chinese out. So my family, I have a lot of relatives who came through Angel Island. My great-grandfather was one of the legitimate categories of people could come and go, that was a merchant. And so every time he would leave the country, every time he would come back, he was interrogated. But it wasn't just him. They would go and they would interview the policeman on the beat, the man who did hauling, the tombstone maker on the corner, his wife, his children, his employees, to make sure that he was the person he said he was. And so this happened with every immigrant. Now, again, my great-grandfather, he was a legitimate merchant, and other people in our family, some of them were legitimate merchants, and some of them were merchants only on paper, in the sense that my great-grandfather had his own business, he had no partners, but he would keep this list of people that were had paid him to be his partners, so anywhere from $50 to $500. So that they would be allowed to come in. One of the things that happened, I think, for a lot of families were paper sons, people who had come in illegally masquerading as the sons of American citizens. And those people, you know, is who the immigration officers were looking for most of all. And so people like my great-grandfather, they would pass through Angel Island in 2, 3, 4 days. But for most immigrants, Chinese immigrants, they would be interrogated and questioned for weeks, months, sometimes up to 2 years, at which point they would be deported back to China, be allowed to land, or maybe commit suicide.
Oh, well, your early books were mystery thrillers, then came On Gold Mountain, the history of your family, and then now these books on the bonds of women. What's next? Are you going to continue with the women-centric books, or what are your next projects?
I've already begun doing research on the next book, and this has to do with something called the Chop Suey Circuit. This was a string of nightclubs that were in New York, San Francisco, Chicago, but a lot of them just all around the country during the 1930s and 40s, where they were kind of like the Cotton Club in the sense that these were all Asian performers, but the audience was mostly Caucasian. And the performers, they billed themselves as things like, you know, the Chinese Frank Sinatra, the Chinese Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, the Chinese Sophie Tucker. And so I have been interviewing people who were in the chop suey circuit or their sons and daughters. I've also have been looking at archival material, people's old costumes and headdresses and shoes and all of their old scrapbooks from those days. And this was a very interesting time period because during World War II, China and the United States were allies. And so all of these bad feelings that had been targeted towards Chinese immigrants prior to the war had evaporated, and for this very short period, China and the United States were allies, and then, of course, in 1949, that was all over when Mao took over China. And so this kind of sense of renewal and opportunity for performers, people who had never had a chance ordinarily in traditional show business, now were able to go into it.
Thank you so much, and I wish you continued success on your book tour.
Great. Thank you so much.